And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 329, your pitching roadmap fab preview for your first little mini fab run coming your direction. Going to get you covered here on a Tuesday evening or whenever you listen to it this week in your wonderful earbuds of choice. Before we get to all that, make sure you follow me on Twitter at PTheAntric, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom, and my co-host, as always, wearing his St. Patrick's Day green. You can find him on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how we doing, my friend?
Happy St. Patty's Day to you. WBC, man. Just wrapped up before we record, but wow. What a freaking tournament. That was a ton of fun. The last WBC was awesome. This one upped it a notch. And they even did a whole bunch of production for the finals tonight. It was awesome. I can't wait for the next one.
Yep, it was sweet. Just watching the way, like, you know, I'm not saying Team USA didn't want it, but the way Venezuela wanted it, like Dominican Republic wanted it, like the way some of these countries embraced the tournament was awesome to see.
Tons of passion. Yes.
Yeah. So that it adds something to the game. Like people watch the Olympics or they watch the World Cup or you watch all these things. And it seems like the US never has that full spirit. I guess we kind of had that first Canada for hockey. It felt like it finally kind of came together. But watching these teams in the WBC and watching Venezuela, like they were grown men crying because it meant so much to them. Victor Martinez, during the national anthem when they were celebrating, was crying because he couldn't sing the song. So if people say it's just a game, it's not just a game, obviously. It means a lot to these people, especially in other countries. And I thought it was awesome. I hope it continues to be this great. I hope the Olympics can be half of how good this is. Because I don't know. We already see the restrictions on participation, I guess, being spring training in the middle of a baseball season when the Olympics comes into play, that's going to get real dicey. So I'm wondering how that plays out. But for now, loved the WBC once again.
Yeah, it's just like, I don't know, the timing of it, people have different thoughts on when to do it. But just like, dude, I am ready for baseball season now. Like the emotion of that tournament, and then now we go from that to going into Vegas this coming weekend and then opening day. Like, let's go.
Yes, let's go indeed. But
this is like our last draft episode of really the preseason.
Yep, of the preseason. As you said, there will be no Thursday night episode, folks, because we will be heading to Las Vegas for the drafts this weekend, for recordings this weekend. So you'll get a show at some point this weekend. Like last year, we did a live, kind of live, wasn't really live, but we recorded it and put it out the same day. Thoughts, interviews, and more from the main event on Saturday at the NFBC. We got a few other ideas we're going to try to incorporate. Not always easy, but we have a game plan. We'll see what we can execute. It'll be better than what DeRosa does. I guarantee you that. I guarantee you that we will know what the win and loss records are.
What a bar to clear. Yeah, Bubba, the main event is on Saturday. As long as we know that, I think we clear DeRosa's style. And,
yeah, we got that going for us. I think he's getting ready for game two of the finals right now. So
that's your guy, man. So DeRosa, Melvin, or Dave Roberts? Who are you taking?
I'll take Melvin out of the three, and that's saying a lot. That's saying a lot. It's not great. It's not great in the DeRosa world. But, yeah, we'll have you guys covered like we did last year over at the NFBC live events in Las Vegas. And then we'll come at you next week on Tuesday with our player shares, beer bets, and more before we got live baseball right after that, folks. Fab previews come up early and often on Thursdays. So, yeah, this is it, buddy. This is it. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yep. And we will be, appreciate everyone who has listened to, especially the hitter roadmap version of this episode has done really well. And bunch of you all have listened to that, and we appreciate that. Hopefully the pitcher roadmap is just as good tonight, but appreciate everyone listening throughout draft season. And as you all know, regular listeners to the show, we do not stop this thing. So basically all in season, Tuesdays will be Bloom Board episodes and Thursdays will be fab previews. So we will keep on keeping on, plus a ton of additional plans for the Patreon for tools and content around that. So if you want to support the show, it's not just a draft season type of benefit, but if you want to support us in season as well, we will certainly continue to hopefully make it worth your while. So patreon.com/BubbaBloom if you want to support the boys and what we do.
And I'll throw a few things out there because, yeah, in draft season, there's the draft tracker, the ADP tracker, the predictions tool, a lot of great stuff that Ryan puts together in that regard, not to mention all the articles by myself, Ben Tidd, Martin Sikulski, and company.
Yep.
But then in season, I have a fab column. I have my news. Ryan has his schedule. He has like like a fab tool. I can't remember exactly how it worked. You know me with the names.
Look at these words he's just throwing out. My meetings at work. I make that part of the Patreon.
We have a team calendar.
There's tons of stuff in season. I am working on some fab tools. I've got a fab tracker ready to go. Fab assistant in the works, which I think will be pretty cool. And then all the stuff we did last year, weekly planner, which is the name for the quote unquote schedule
that
we just threw out there. The weekly planner, live bloom boards, minor league leaderboards, all that stuff's going to be ready to go again this year as well. I don't know. Maybe I'll throw my work schedule in the mix. Screw it.
It'll let me know when I can sneak you away for a daytime show. Yeah. All right. Enough of that. Let's get into some of the news and notes before we talk pitching roadmap here. Seiya Suzuki, he left Saturday's game for Team Japan after sliding headfirst into second base, hurt his knee. They didn't test him there. Seemed a little bit odd to not test him at a ballpark. They probably has equipment for that. Flew back to Arizona. The Cubs doctors did the MRI and all the good stuff there. Reports came back that Suzuki's dealing with a minor PCL sprain, which just usually requires rest and rehab. They have not officially placed him on the IL. They're trying to see how he responds in the next few days. Ryan, how does that make you feel knowing we have a big auction on Friday?
Yeah, I mean, could have been worse, it sounds like. Especially like when I was kind of following this and when they first saw Seiya come back from the WBC, he was like limping. It's like, oh, this is not great, but I guess earlier on Tuesday was not showing a limp and had the results of the MRI. So it seems like bullet dodged. I don't think it really knocks Seiya's value too much. I will be continuing to monitor that though, all the way leading up to our Friday auction, because the chapter does not seem closed. Because there could be certainly a scenario where the Cubs just say, screw it. Let's IL him for the first 10 days of the season. You get the full week lead up to that, and you make sure you're good to go after that. But I don't know. For me, at least so far, this seems like bullet dodged and not a huge hit to Seiya Suzuki's value, in my opinion, unless we, hear other stuff.
And if you're drafting coming up here, I recorded a ADP Regis and Followers and whatnot with Ben Tidd on Monday. And over the past weekend when Seiya got hurt, his ADP fell from 94 to 124. So the people in the main event took a little notice of that with him. And let's just throw this out there. If the Cubs do place him on the IL to get a little rest to get ready for the season, Matt Shaw could get some run. Michael Conforto could get some run. There's a couple options, at least for the first couple weeks of the season, that might be some cheapies on the fab wire if an IL stint comes your direction.
And that's the thing to keep as we switch our minds from draft season to in season, is these little like kind of micro 1 week, 2 week rentals, especially in these 15 teamers that we're prepping for in Vegas. Bubba's like, yeah, if you can get 2 weeks out of Matt Shaw, and who knows, maybe someone else gets hurt. Matt Shaw is flexible enough, can play elsewhere. Like, you never know how long that can hold. So continuing to kind of grind those edges and get a week or two at a time of decent players getting playing time is kind of the mindset that at least I need to start flipping towards after, the drafts are done this weekend.
Jose Ramirez of the Cleveland Guardians left the game on Sunday with a shoulder injury. The team doesn't even feel it's necessary to do imaging. They're not too concerned about him. So he's day to day with just sore shoulders, what they're saying. I'd still keep an eye on this though.
I guess doesn't affect JRAM's value for me. I'm still fine taking him. I guess he's dropped a little bit in main events because someone has to drop as pitching goes up, but I'm still fine with JRAM. Fifth overall, middle of the first round, wherever he's going, this doesn't change that for me.
Very, very good. Zach Neto sprained his left wrist diving into home plate on Sunday. Imaging came back just a sprained wrist. He hit off a tee on Monday. He was in the lineup for the Angels on Tuesday, so it appears we may have dodged a bullet, Ryan. I guess we're still not out of the woods yet. Anything can happen, but What's your thoughts on this Neto injury?
Yeah, I guess I kind of out of the woods like this isolated situation. But do you worry at all about his stolen base aggressiveness, Zach Neto's, like the rest of the way? Because I don't know the exact quotes that I was reading after kind of reading through this, but it was like, oh, I've learned a lesson about sliding headfirst into second base. Again, I don't think that was the exact quote, but it's like, I don't know. Do we take a 30 stolen base, not projection, but a 30 stolen base, hope for Neto and knock that down to 20? I don't know. I was listening to you and Ben on Bench with Bubba earlier this week. I mean, he was one of the biggest fallers, least in main event drafts over the last week, to a price where I think is really nice for Zach Neto. I'm still willing to pay. But maybe if you're drafting off of projections, maybe you knock a handful of bags off of Zach Neto's projection there, because I don't know. Maybe this was a wake-up call, and yeah, you don't know.
Yeah, he's slid down to about pick 48 right now. So now you're talking a whole different area of drafting. Now, instead of the end of the second round, you're into the fourth round, 3-4 turn at least with Zach Neto, which does change things a bit. He did go 0-for-3 with the strikeout on Tuesday night. He's hitting .219 this spring. So
don't care about that.
I know. I'm just saying, I'd like to see at least see him come back to life a little bit here and make me feel better. Maybe steal a couple bags. That'd be cool too. Couple pitching notes here, just something to keep in mind if you like to stash pitchers recovering, is what I'll say, instead of injured pitchers. Carlos Rodon is expected back middle to late April. Zach Wheeler is throwing a 35 pitch bullpen on Wednesday. He's progressing to a late April return. And Garrett Cole is going to throw an inning in a spring training game on Wednesday. He's still not expected back till May, but you have three big pitchers that are potentially out for three to 6 weeks to start the season.
Yeah. And I don't know. I still don't know how to kind of handle this. Just the way that I draft, I'm still avoiding this trio just because it is drafting an injured pitcher. And I just generally don't like to do that because other guys are going to get hurt. And even though at least for Rodon and Wheeler, they seem far enough in their rehab that a setback seems unlikelier than like a Garrett Cole. But I don't know. Like if you stash those two, obviously this is good news that there's at least a timeline, and that timeline is in the first month of the season. But I don't know. If the prices are still going up on these guys, I'm not willing to pay a higher price. I just still think you're drafting an injured pitcher, and that's tough to do for the first month or more. Yeah.
Just throwing this out there, though, all three did have surgery, Ryan. So we have that going for them.
Sure. Yes. they did. Hey, I know. You're holding me accountable. You're holding me accountable. As Cole Reagans is announced for opening day starter, I saw jubilation for that in the Discord earlier today. So, I continue to hold me accountable, my friend.
Ha-Sung Kim of the Atlanta Braves reported to camp on Monday. He injured a tendon in his finger slipping on ice during the offseason, had to have surgery. He's progressing nicely. He's supposed to hopefully start hitting in the next couple of weeks. Once he starts doing that, a better timetable could be in place. Originally, they said early May. He's still on track for early May, but there's a world where if he starts hitting pretty soon, you might get him back a little sooner. So just throwing him out there as well.
Could just shatter the hopes and dreams of the Mauricio Dubon fan club out there. But
no, Profar helped that out.
That's true. Are you targeting at all in reserve round Ha-Sung Kim?
In reserves, I've had him queued up. I do not have any shares of him, but I've had him queued up, and I'm interested. Like his ADP is 450 right now.
Yeah, which is basically the last pick, which is basically kind of undrafted. So I don't know. I feel like the ceiling's good enough for Kim where, like, if you've got a 30th round pick and a 15 teamer to spend to stash, you can do it. And, you know, if other stuff happens, you can drop them and try and pick them back up later on, but only probably last round or two.
Well, I'll throw this out there. Jordan Westberg is starting to perform baseball activities, but still can't swing or can't like hit a ball, and has no timetable for his return. Would you rather take a chance on Kim or Westberg?
Kim. Okay. Definitely Kim. Westberg just scares the hell out of him. And Westberg's starting to perform baseball activities, but that's like my kid performing baseball activities. Can't swing either. So I'm still not touching Jordan Westberg.
No fault there. Robert Stevenson had another setback, another UCL injury. He's going to see a second opinion to decide if they need surgery or not. So if you can pretty much kiss that one goodbye. Does that move Kirby Yates up for you? Because he was a riser in the recent drafts, or is it more like they have Romano and Pomeranz? It's just a mess in Anaheim.
It does move up Yates for me, actually, to the point where last Friday I did my kind of Vegas prep auction on the NFBC, and I took Kirby Yates for $5, which at the time I was like, that's a lot for Kirby Yates, but has been going 8, 9, 6, and five
could be pretty awesome.
Yeah. So five could be pretty sweet. The Angels have not named Kirby Yates the closer. There are other options there. I did back up Kirby Yates with a reserve round Jordan Romano just to kind of try and get some Angels saves, which is questionable in the first place. But yeah, this does move up Kirby Yates for me. I feel like Pomeranz, given lefty, like I don't feel like he'll probably be used more in leverage situations. And Yates, almost kind of by default, and he's still healthy, seems to me like the guy, and you can get him for cheap. So if I'm wrong, like, doesn't hurt you that bad.
Yep. Yep. I'm with you there. Yates is definitely moving up the board for me. Like, honestly, I like him. Like, would you rather go Griffin Jacks or Kirby Yates?
Griffin Jacks.
I only mentioned that because you said is actually progressing and might be back by the end of April.
Okay. Gotcha. What about like a Trevor McGill? What about a Milwaukee closer or
Josh
Kirby Hader? Yates this weekend?
I'd probably go Kirby Yates over the Milwaukee combo just because I think they're both better than Kirby Yates. I just don't know who it is still.
Right. I'd probably go Hader over Yates still.
Yeah. It's just
Hader's going for more.
Much more. Last bit of news here. Merrill Kelly and Joe Musgrove will start the season on the IL, but two different stories here, folks. Merrill Kelly, he's back. He's just a little behind in his rehab from his back injury. Threw the other day, threw fine, felt good. So he'll apply this one as like a start, maybe two, to start the season. Whereas Joe Musgrove has not pitched since March 4th against Great Britain. They're saying he has not recovered well from that, and he's in a holding pattern at the moment. So there is a zero timetable for Joe Musgrove right now. Like he almost needs a full ramp up again.
And also zero chance I'm even interested in Joe Musgrove. Yeah. Right? Like this does not sound good. It sucks. Well, I thought Joe Musgrove was far enough removed. Maybe this is another hole in my he got the surgery argument here. Joe Musgrove very far removed from his surgery and obviously not reacting well to the ramp up. So Joe Musgrove off my board, Merrill Kelly still very much on my board. It doesn't seem like this is as serious of a deal, certainly as it is for Musgrove.
Yep. That's why I wanted to mention them together just because not all things are created equal. All right. Let's talk pitching roadmap, Ryan. When we did hitting, we did pockets of 50. Essentially, we're doing these a little different in the pitching world. So let everybody know what we are looking at with these fancy Bloom boards you put together.
All right, pitching roadmap. So what we are looking at here, for those of you following on YouTube, we are going to look at pitchers 1 through 20, 20 through 40, 40 through 60, 60 through 80 in reverse order. So I probably should have mentioned those in the reverse order, but hey, it's been a long day. We've got the Bloom boards up of projected ERA, whip, strikeouts, and saves. So we can kind of see, especially when I'm looking at like pitcher roadmap, it's really not as, for me, it's not as, and that's also why we're not going as deep. Like once you get past the ADP, ironically enough, pitcher number 80 is Aaron Nola at 183. After you get past a certain point, it's just like shoot for upside, kind of get your guy and go from there. It's not a whole lot of like position category strategy like there is for hitters. So we kind of axed it at the top 80. I think the biggest thing for pitchers is obviously when you want to get your saves is probably the biggest strategic point. And then there is kind of a sub, kind of like a, I don't know, objective 1B of balancing ratio guys with strikeout guys. And probably also balancing your volume guys with your quote unquote injury risk guys. Like we can predict injuries at all. So that's kind of the blend that at least I'm looking for when I'm trying to build a pitching roadmap. But at the end of the day, pitchers are just so volatile. just get the skills, get the guys who you think are going to stay healthy, and go from there.
Yeah, I think the biggest lesson we're going to learn through going through these, you know, pockets of 40 pitchers essentially is these are where the closers are. These are where certain X pitching targets, right, statistical targets we're looking for are. And then you kind of go from there, because you're going to have your guys you want to believe upside, you think outperform their projections, or other guys, vice versa, different stories. Some guys you think the projections are just completely insane on. And that's a whole other story, but this at least gives us the idea when we're navigating each draft room, because if you pair this with the hitting roadmap we discussed, and then you build a roadmap like Ben Titt has talked about in our Patreon article, you can do the whole cha-cha and see where it goes. So, Ryan, let's just get to it. 60 through 80 here. Starts at Shoto Imanaga. We know your thoughts there. All the way down to Aaron Nola. Ironically, we know your thoughts there.
do we? So this I don't is even 61. Have much Aaron Nola, and yet 61. I'm still you can't the Aaron Nola guy.
You can't quit him now. You've planted that flag so far into the ground the last couple of years, you can't just pull that thing back out. That's like me with other players. It just it happens. 61 through 80, though, what's your first takeaway from this little pocket?
For me, it's one share of Aaron Nola so far. Jeez, what team? DC. Okay. For me, yeah, I'm always going to look at the relievers first. And this is just, it's funny. So this, actually, I should have mentioned this as well. The ADP that we're looking at, maybe you did. The ADP we're looking at is the last week of main event drafts. So pretty up-to-date ADP, as they have been all draft season. Abner Uribe and Trevor McGill are right next to each other, 142, 145, not touching either of those. Brian Abreu is moving up at a ADP of 158. It's too expensive for me at this price to go for Brian Abreu, who may be the closer and could be a top 10 closer, but also could be the closer for like 2 weeks and steps back to Josh Hader. So, and then last but not least, you've got Sir Anthony Dominguez at 165 with ADP there projected for 21 saves, which I don't mind at that price. So in general, like unless you're targeting Sir Anthony, this is not a place to get saves. Like you need to get at least one closer, maybe two, depending how comfortable you are specking late in drafts on your closer too. But that's my biggest takeaway, is you need to have your closer by pick 140 in these at least recent 15 teamers.
Yeah, I usually try to have my second closer by the pick 140,
perhaps
if I can. If I can, it doesn't always work out that way, but yeah, because we've said it to her blue in the face, the Uribe McGill situation, like even the projections are so close to each other because they don't know who's going to say they're both projected for 19 saves. Like that feels like they're just throwing their hands up going, I don't know who it is. So
as they should, because no one knows who it is. We can all 100%. We can speculate. There's people who like McGill, people who like Uribe. Nobody has any idea, and I'm not taking a 50-50 shot with a top 10 round pick in 15 teamers. There's no way.
And it's like I've been saying all draft season, like I think Abner's got the best skills of the bunch. I feel like McGill gets the roll out the gate until he either gets hurt or they can trade him. That's just the way it feels. So I guess if you want the early saves and you want to take that gamble, take McGill. But I just don't know if I want to take a pick at 145 with that. So, yes, to your point, Sir Anthony is the only guy here. And I foresee him continuing to rise. Like I think in my last OLAC, he went for $9. I could see him hit in the $11, $12 range when things are all said and done. In the next at the end of the weekend, when closers get pushed up some more. So yeah, it's not a closing range. Try to get that established before that. What are you seeing in the starting pitching landscape here?
Not many. So like the ratios are tough, and I know these are projections and projected ratios can vary widely. So like, I don't take these projections with a grain of salt, focus on the skills instead. But there's definitely, and you'll see this compared to the next slide we'll kind of do here, is just the chances that you get elite ratios from this group are not there. And obviously this is just a lower caliber group. Like the K's aren't really there either. There's only a couple guys projected for over 170. That's Mackenzie Gore, 170 strikeouts. That's Mackenzie Gore. Pick 145 and Robbie Ray at pick 164. So you're not getting, at least on paper, a ton of K's, and you're rolling the dice a little bit with ratio. So it all just kind of depends on who you like. Honestly, I don't really like a ton of the pitchers in this group. Obviously Shota is probably my favorite target, but he's the most expensive here at pick 141. But there's some guys like Imai we've talked about, just don't know really who he is, so not really going there. Shea McClanahan's at pick 164. I don't like that. Tanner Bibee, 170, just too risky for me. Cade Horton, 175, also not in there. Chris Bubich, 182, has some health issues. So to me, this is also a spot in the draft where I want to flip over to hitters and not really, certainly not focus on relievers. And the starting pitcher pool for me isn't as strong.
Yeah, this is a pocket to me. It's just upside. What upside do you like in this range? Because it's one of those ranges. I talked about how much I like Shane Baz. Like, do you like Bubba Chandler's skill set to figure it out? Like, there's a world where you can see both those guys. If they hit their skills, they're much better than this ADP. There's a lot of sections where they could fall flat on their face as well. Same with Edward Cabrera. Can he stay healthy enough to pitch enough and just be elite in the strikeout department? I think that's very strong. Same goes for Robbie Ray in that respect. I think we know how good he can be, but what can he be? So there's a lot of that in this pocket of what kind of upside do you want to take here? Is this your SP4, your 5? If he's your 3, you're in trouble, I think.
Yes.
I try to have at least 3 by now. It's hard to say 4 because you still have to pick other positions at this point in the draft, but I like at least 3. This should be hopefully your SP4 range, or you take your shots after pick 183. So, yeah, I think this is where you start looking for the upside to kind of, if you have a balanced or a solid starting 3, you can start to take your shots after with these guys.
Yeah. The thing is, I just don't see a whole lot of upside in a lot of these guys. Like, yes, Baz, I'll give you Chandler. And of course, there's a ton to pick from. But like, I don't know if like Ranger Suarez has the biggest upside. I don't know if Robbie Ray does. I don't know if McClanahan Snell does, just given the workload restrictions. So like, yeah, I agree. It's a spot to take some upside with like your SP4. I just don't like the profile of pitcher that's available to you doesn't, like Tanner Bibee doesn't scream upside. Certainly Aaron Nola does not scream upside, if I'm being completely unbiased down the line here. So it's just hard to, for me, it's hard to kind of spec on a lot of these guys because I don't really like the ceiling for a lot of them at SP4. And that's maybe why I'm grabbing so much Shota at 141 as my SP4. I know he doesn't have the biggest upside.
I was about to say, like,
he doesn't.
Compared to these guys?
I will admit, it's just a group that just doesn't have much. The more I look at it, like Boz has upside, but like, damn, he hasn't shown it. Like the floor is pretty rough. So I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's not a great pocket. And I was going through my stack of papers here. And I was going to compare that. There's
you literally are. What are we doing over there?
Yeah, I got it. We joked about it with the, on the hitting show, that when we talked pitchers, there's certain pockets based on look at the hitting, we want pitching. This is a gigantic area of hitting is what I want to hit on here. Like this is an area where it's like the final third basements we talked about. A lot of catcher, late catcher one, early catcher twos are here. Some decent outfielders, like your outfielder 4 or 5s could be in this range. So this is a massive hitting pocket. I just want to emphasize that as we keep going here, trying to piece it all together for everybody that you don't have to find pitchers here. If you don't like them, you can build your team with other spots. That's the whole point of the roadmap, is to navigate through it and don't force it. Just know what's here if it's necessary. And a lot of it's not here. All right. 41 through 60, the left side of the screen, Ryan, a few more closing options for sure. And this is where I like to, Dennis Santana is kind of the end of the road for me if I have my options. I don't mind Sir Anthony, but try to be the end of the road.
And yeah, for me, that's the cliff is Dennis Santana, looking at this at pick 135. Again, this is the last week of main event ADP. So these closer prices are inflated. Your mileage may vary. But yeah, just in terms of actual ranking, like, yeah, Dennis Santana. And then after that is Abner Uribe, Trevor McGill. Like that's a cliff. That's a cliff. And maybe Dennis Santana falls flat on his face. I have no idea, but certainly feels like a stronger pick for me. I pick 135 than the Milwaukee guys in the 140s. So Yeah, of these 20 pitchers that are going between pick 107 and 135, so that's a lot of them. Seven of them are relievers. So you've got Kenley Jansen at 110, Emilio Pagan 111, Carlos Estevez falling 120, Griffin Jacks 120, Ryan Walker, your guy, at 128, Hader 130, and Dennis Santana 135. So if you don't get the true cream of the crop, even like almost think this is like a tier three of pitchers, because we haven't really talked about like the Hoffman, Fairbanks, Palencia type group, which will come in the next group that we're talking about. But if this is kind of your, if you go semi-early RP2, this is a great spot to do it. This is kind of that third tier, and for me, the last tier of pitchers that you want to grab here by pick 135.
Yep. I see myself in this range a lot with, you know, Jansen's, don't mind Pagan, Walker. I've slowly become a fan of, just based on the closing landscape, and the Giants just haven't brought anybody to take his job. So it actually seems like it is his job, and the Dennis Santana. So it just seems like those are the options in close. Like they're still, these are closers that feel like it's their gig, is what I'm trying to get at. Now, could they lose it? Any closer can. But this definitely seems like a region to do so. And you still get some with decent ratios, some with strikeouts. So it's not like there's complete duds as you get farther down the board. And that's a plus as well. Starting pitching, though, it's a little better. Still not great.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, agree.
Still not great here, Ryan.
Like, this is where all the youths go. And I don't like the youths at the price. So, like, you've got Mizorowski at 112, Schittler 116. Where's Chase Burns on this thing?
He's probably up in the top 100.
Probably higher up? God. You got Strider 108. I know he's not a youth, but someone we don't like. We don't like Glasnow 107. So, yeah, not a ton of, again, good starting pitcher options. There's a couple that I love. Nick Lodolo staring me in the face at 111. Ryan Pepio 112. A little bit later, I like Trevor Rogers at 129. Sonny Gray sitting there at 114. I know he's had a bad spring, but that seems to be every season. Sonny Gray is a bad spring and is probably fine. Nate Eovaldi's healthy, making it through spring training with no problem. Great pick at 118. So definitely some pitchers I like, starters I like, but also some that I also don't like. But I'm probably, yeah, if I'm doing a draft plan here, you probably have to grab one starting pitcher here, because especially if you don't like the next group, that's a long crew to go without taking a starting pitcher. So
yeah, and it's one of those, like, you almost feel like you have to force it based on the next pocket. Like, okay, like we both like Lodolo. You like him a lot more than I do, but I've jumped on that bandwagon with you. Like, I like Pepio, I like Gray, we know Nate the Great, Trevor Rogers, I don't mind buying into Michael King a little more. So it's a pocket where I find myself drafting a lot in this range. I'm not saying I love them by any means, because they all have their warts in big, big ways. But I guess if I'm going to, you know, look at the upside of, like, Michael King, if we get back to throwing innings, this guy is still pretty darn good. Even the projections like him for a guy coming off that messed up injury situation last year. So it's a really good range. It's just the cliff drops off quickly after this, like we just talked about in the 61 through 80.
Yeah, which is probably why I have so much Lodolo, Pepio, Eovaldi. Like, I just, you look further down and you get nervous pretty quickly.
Yeah, and to compare to the hitting roadmap, there's not a lot of hitting in that range. So this is why we take pitching here. It or, checks out.
Or do auctions.
This is, I'm telling you, man, the more we do, yes. This guy, it's the auctions are so great.
All right, so closers in this tier, how would you rank them? Kenley, Pagan, Estevez, Jax, Walker, Hader, Santana. I know I just rattled off seven.
I'm looking at them.
It's tough, but
I go with Pagan, Walker, Jax, Pagan, Santana.
Okay. You said Pagan twice, but that's
sorry.
Okay. You didn't say Kenley. Is Kenley near the top? No, is it tough?
Kenley would have been the second Pagan.
Okay. Okay. Yes. Okay.
Yes.
Gotcha.
No Estevez for me. Staying far away from that situation.
Not touching Estevez, right? At pick 120 again. Like, I don't even think Estevez was that good last year, and the velocity just has not recovered this spring. So I'm not touching that.
He hasn't pitched in a long time.
Hasn't pitched. not touching Hader. So if I had to rank them, I don't even know if I'm going Jax when I know I picked 120, when I know Ryan Walker is sitting there 8 picks later and Dennis Santana is sitting there 15 picks later that we know have the job. We think Jax has most of the job, but that's a lot different than knowing someone has the job. So I'd probably go Pagan, Jansen, Walker, Santana, and then it doesn't matter the rest of them. Because I'm not, so
you're not even drafting Jax.
I'd probably take Jax in a pinch, but Estevez and Hader, I'm not.
Yeah, because if we believe in past history, where we always like, there's all the discussion about Kevin Cash and the Rays. They like to play this closing game, and then it's come out like Collette has told us he actually doesn't. He sticks like Fairbanks was the dude majority of the time. He just was hurt often, but when he was healthy, he was the dude. So it feels like if he starts with Jax, maybe he sticks with him is what you got to hope for in that scenario.
Could. Yep, absolutely. That could. And Jax, we know from an actual like skill standpoint, the guy nails.
Yes, so. Very good. Always been a good, big Griffin Jax fan. Johan Duran was in the way for years, rightfully so. That is not the case anymore. Yep. All right, you want to flip to, I guess it's 21 through 40, where things get a lot greener on the board.
There's our Chase Burns sitting at 106. There he is. All right, so pitchers 20 through 40. This is ADP 47 with Freddie Peralta down to our guy Chase Burns at pick 106. You've got a handful of closers here, all pretty good, but again, you're paying a premium. You're getting Ryan Helsley at pick 69. Daniel Palencia, wow, he's moving up. Pick 76. Jeez. Yep. And probably will be higher after his showing in the WBC final. He looks healthy, man. He looks very healthy right now. So you got Palencia at 76, Jeff Hoffman at 82, Marcell Iglesias 85, and then Pete Fairbanks is your fifth closer off the board here at pick 90. Again, just to stay on the closer train here, I mentioned Helsley at pick 69, the most expensive of this group within pitchers 20 through 40. Big gap between Helsley and the next closer, which is Aroldis Chapman at pick 44. So there's a major kind of cliff in closer tiers where I know we're jumping ahead a little bit, but there are 8 closers going in the top 50. God. And then nobody until like basically pick 70 with Helsley. So just know that if you want to get a top 8 closer, you're going to have to spend a top 50 pick, which is, I can't believe I'm saying that. You definitely get a little bit of a discount for an admittedly lower quality tier in this ADP 70 through 90 group for closers.
Yeah, I was going to add on to that. Basically, at the top 100 picks, there's 13 closers. So nearly 20% of the picks, not just pitchers, picks. It's more than 20% of the pitchers. If you do the math, it's 13 of the top 80 pitchers are closers, which is pretty insane to think about right now. But I like these guys like Helsley. I have some shares of. Palencia is my guy, which I'll have no shares of anymore probably.
I know. He's going to be – I feel like he's going to be just bonkers expensive at Vegas.
Yeah, I got a lot of shares early. He was like 11 or 12 bucks in auctions. Like, this is great. And then he went for 20, I think, the other night in my OLAC, if I remember correctly. Or someone was mentioning that. Maybe he's 20 in a different OLAC. And, we look at the ADP here. He's going to keep climbing, obviously. Hoffman's a guy I've been slowly buying in on because it feels like his AAV does not match the ADP, if that makes sense, because he is the guy there and his underlying skills suggest that he should have been better. Iglesias, I love, but I'm getting scared of his spring has not been great, and Robert Suarez is sitting there. And then Fairbanks is fine. He's just boring as heck, but he's fine. So it's a pocket. I don't mind any of these guys if you want a little bit of a discount from the top 8. But I want at least one of these 13, I'll tell you that much, and you got to pay for them.
Yeah, not worried about Raisel Iglesias' spring. It's been 3 2/3, a 31% K-minus walk, whatever that even means in 3 2/3.
Yeah, whatever that means is correct.
Agreed. I don't really have any issues with taking a closer here. Again, it sucks if you're in these NFBC drafts and you kind of have to take your medicine, but that's just the price of closers right now? Like, would you rather? I always think, well, what's the relative value compared to the next group of closers? Like, yeah, it sucks to spend a top 80 pick on a second tier closer, but it's a hell of a lot better than spending a pick 100 on a crappy closer. So that's yep. That's kind of how I think of it. It's just kind of the price of playing a game this year, and you just kind of have to do it unless you just feel really strongly about a couple late closers and you can spec on those guys. If they hit, you've hit the nuts. It's awesome. But just, I don't know. It's the price of admission.
And it's the old narrative street. They always say it's like fabbing closers. Yes, you can find saves, but it's also an uphill battle. Tough.
Yeah.
Uphill battle. So
especially in 15 teamers, it's just so Greg Jewett had a, and you highlighted this this past week, Bubba, but Greg Jewett had a really good thread on fab results for, I believe it was main event, 15 team closers last year. And outside of, I think, three closers, it was just, it was very brutal. So if you think you can fab closers, maybe you can, but it's not easy, nor is it very fun on Sunday evening.
Yeah, the FUD part is definitely a factor there. Starting pitching, though, this is where things are great, especially for a guy like myself that usually likes to wait a few rounds. This is my wheelhouse where I will pepper this board. I like a majority of them. I'm not going to say all of them, but I'd say almost all of these guys I would not have a problem being on my roster, especially the top half from like 47 to 74. I could see myself with at least two of those, if not hopefully three of them, and not have to worry about the next page.
Yeah.
But the way I draft, probably two, because I obviously wait on pitching, as we've made mention, and I want a closer, which makes things difficult. So what are your thoughts on the starting pitching pocket of, I guess it's 21 through 40, ADP 47 through 106?
Yep. I mean, we've been pretty down on starting pitchers this entire episode so far until now. But again, that's important. That's valuable to know. Like, we both love this pocket of starting pitchers, again, from ADP 47, really this first group, like you said, from pick 47 through 70, starting at Freddie Peralta and ending at like Framber Valdez. Hell, even Joe Ryan's right there. So at 74, if we are crafting an auction strategy, not to give away everything, but we're open books all the time, there's a reason why we like these $20, low $20 pitchers. And I even like getting two of them because this is the crew. I mean, this is Freddie Peralta, Logan Webb, George Kirby, Jesus Luzardo, Dylan Cease, Yuri Perez, my guy Bradish, Framber, Joe Ryan. Like, I like all those guys. Like, truly, I like all those guys. And so, if I'm crafting a draft strategy, auction strategy, whatever, I want to get two by this point because, A, I like them, and B, there's just not as many good options later on in the draft.
Yeah, 100% with you. I pepper this range. Like I said, it's like Freddie Peralta, Logan Webb, Lizardo, Cease, Ryan. Those are, you could probably find at least one, if not two of those on almost all of my teams.
You skipped over a name, dude.
Yeah, I did. KB. I want nothing to do with KB or Kirby, either one. They both can go.
It's tough.
But it's definitely a range, though, where I will try my best to leave every draft with at least one, if not two of them. It's a high priority because the ratios are really good, the workloads are really good, and the strikeouts are elite with some of these guys. Like we talked about Peralta, he might not get to the 200 Ks, but he's actually got there the last a couple times. Webb's just an innings machine. Lizardo's a monster. Dylan Cease is a strikeout machine. Framber's just a workhorse. Joe Ryan, if he stays healthy, could be elite. Like, this is just a pocket of goodness right here. And all the categories you want from a starting pitcher. Like, these are the guys that could be aces if things click properly. Like, Logan Webb was the runner-up in the Cy Young Award last year. Like, he's been that good. He's gotten, like, top five Cy Young votes, I think, like, three of the last 4 years or something like that. So, like, he pitches that well. These guys are very, very, very good.
And to tie it back to our hitting episode last week, we said, you know, how much we love the early shortstops, early outfielders, like, and that's what we're doing in drafts is getting those five category guys at those positions and waiting on pitching until this group. That's pretty consistently been both of our game plans, is to kind of wait till that post pick 45 to start getting starting pitchers. And I don't know, it's just, you know, I know we're kind of saying the same thing a little bit on some of these recent episodes, but like, this is why we feel that way. Is very deep group, lots of different options. If you get sniped on two or three of them, you still got two or three other alternatives. I think that's the big thing. Like your draft plan, we talk about pivots and whatnot. Your draft plan doesn't hinge on one guy or even two or three guys here. It hinges on like five or six guys. If you can't get one of five or six guys, then, you know, either extremely unlucky or you did something wrong.
And again, shameless plug, but listen to the Bench with Bubba episode with Ben that I recorded on Monday, because he recaps his main event and he built a roadmap. And some of these pockets of pitchers were specifically mapped out, and he had a section where like four out of the five targets went, and he basically pushed up to get certain players to make sure he met, like he got the guys he was looking for. Yeah. So like ADP is one thing, getting your targets is another thing. So that's the whole point of putting these roadmaps together for you. It's not just, hey, like when you're at this point of the draft, these are the guys. They're not always going to be there. So you just need to know, like, hey, I like these guys. I like these guys for these reasons, and kind of map it out that way. And that's to Ryan's point. That's why we keep like banging the drum on this Go Team Venezuela. But that's the purpose of this whole project.
Yep.
1 through 20, Ryan. This is where it's Oregon Duck all over the place on this
board. St. Patrick,
sorry. But eight closers out of these 20 pitchers, nearly half of the pitchers in the top 45 picks are closers, which, yeah. What else you got here? You can hit the closers up if you want to start there.
No, I mean, I don't know. They're newsflash. All these guys are very good. Like, I don't even know if I have any fades on this. I've got a couple as we look further down, maybe Cole Reagan's at 39 there, but no, all these guys objectively are very good, and you don't listen to this podcast for that valuable information. These top 45 picks are all very, very good. It's just the opportunity cost, right, of taking a pitcher here and what you miss out on the hitting side, specifically at shortstop and outfield, and just that goodness. So, all these guys are great, pretty much. I have not ended up with a ton of them. I mean, sometimes I'll mix it up and take an early pitcher or two. But in general, I'm pounding kind of first three bats, maybe first four round pick are bats here. It's just very tough to spend a third round pick on a closer. Maybe I'm old school and not adapting to this year's market, but it's just what you're missing out on the hitting side is rather immense.
Yeah, like I think I have one Cade Smith share when he wasn't this expensive. Otherwise, I usually start in the Bednar Chapman range, and they weren't this expensive then either. Let me clarify that. Otherwise, yeah, it's, I'm not taking. I'm not taking.
We were talking about draft and hold, and we're like, oh, once Fabley's come, I think the closer prices will.
It's gotten worse.
It's actually gotten worse. Like, gotten what? Worse. What the hell? And like, I think I don't know. I think you have to pivot from that. Like, I think, I don't know. Obviously, these are smart players putting up a ton of dough to draft these closers so early. But, like, man, we've both been playing this game for a long time. And it just does not make sense to do it. It just doesn't.
We will find out in 6 months.
We will find out in 6 months.
How well this works. And I'm absolutely very, very, I'm looking forward to the 17,000 articles that are written by every place about how well this went, but yeah. It'll be definitely something to keep an eye on, especially God forbid injury start. Like it was three, 4 years ago, like so many closers got hurt, and it was just a plethora of new availability closers on the wire. Like that would just be insane if that took place this year. Not rooting for it at all, but that'd be wild as well. Let's flip to the starting pitching here. And I just want to highlight, like you and I usually don't go with one of the big three early because it costs so much money. But I will specify, like, at least the reason we like, you know, our five category hitters, shortstops, outfielders, these pitchers are essentially four category machines at pitching. Yeah. So if that's your mindset, I just want to point out this is why they are going here. It should be obvious, but they do elite things to your team that, yes, as long as they pitch the entire season, it's unmatched throughout the rest of the
year. It is. And a lot of times you'll look at like player ratings at the end of the year, and it is like the things that Scooble, Skeens, and Crochet can do for you in four categories is more than a hitter can do. So like it's just that they need to stay healthy and make it through the whole season and do their thing. But if that happens, I'm now kind of talking little bit out of both ends here.
Well, that's why I wanted to bring it up, because we bury him, but I want to at least.
I will say, though, my rant was more against relief pitchers and starting pitchers.
True.
If you get a true stud starting pitcher that is elite in all four categories, like Skubal, Skeens, and Crochet were, Skeens maybe 3.5, take out wins, but it does like set you up very nicely. I will say that, like, the taking an early pitcher, and if that early pitcher hits, you are in very good shape. You are in very good shape. That's the case for it.
Exactly. That's all I wanted to mention, because you and I usually don't go that direction, but for those that do, this is why I wanted to bring that up to the table here.
Yep.
Christopher Sanchez has been on the rise, which again annoys me, because I love Christopher Sanchez. I'm pretty sure I won't have any more shares as draft season goes along. He went for $30 in my last auction. That was way out of my world.
I was going to say, for all the talk of who's the SP4 in 2026, I think we have the answer.
That was my guy. That was my guy when we did our board. Remember?
Hey, man. Yeah. You were on it.
So just gonna throw that one out there. I get a lot of things wrong. Gonna mention that one about 2 months ago. We did our top 20 pitchers. That was number 4. So yeah,
it's good. Good call.
Then you got Chris Sale, though, and this is interesting to me, because it feels like Sale, he had the fluky injury last year, and who's to say he can't be that Cy Young again? And he's like, it's what I'm trying to make the argument for. If there's a guy that's not going in the top, you know, the first round, this guy could be a first round talent, if that makes sense.
Sure. Absolutely. And he's ready to go. Earlier on Tuesday, threw 75 pitches in spring training.
Strong innings.
Yep. Right. So, like, we know the skills with Chris Sale are good. It's more, what does he look like? And is he healthy in the spring? And he checks both those boxes. So I am behind that. Like, I don't even think Chris Sale is that much behind the top three.
No.
If, innings equal, which innings are not equal. That's why Chris Sale is going later. But, like, a fully healthy full season Chris Sale is just as good as Skubal, Skeens, Crochet, in my opinion.
Definitely. What else are you seeing in the starting pitching tiers here? Because, again, we mentioned we usually wait till the 45s and beyond, but there are some very valuable arms here, like Cole Reagans at ADP 39.
Sure, if you want to go that route. No, definitely. I would say there is definitely like a tier break here, probably around like 30, depending on what you think of Brian Wu. But after pick 30, it's Wu, Hunter Brown, Logan Gilbert, Cole Reagans, DeGrom, Max Fried, like. I think I'd rather pay up, if I'm going to go early starting pitcher, rather pay up a little bit more and get one of those top five starting pitchers over that group that I just named. But certainly even Cole Reagans has elite SP1 upside. All these guys do. So it's interesting to see Hunter Brown's projections much worse than the rest of this group, though. 119 whip, 350 ERA. Like, that's not that great going at pick 35.
Yeah, not great for this group, that's for sure. But he seems to like outperform that more often than not, which is the weird part. That's probably why he's going here. Yep. He's having a monster spring too. And you and I both we just want him healthy by the end of spring. I really don't care a whole lot of, like, people were talking about Sonny Gray walking guys today. I don't care. Just make it to opening day. I will go to battle with Sonny Gray the entire season unless something goes wrong.
Like, I don't care at all.
Yeah.
Agreed.
So, like, you know, do you want to see them pitching well? Sure. Not going to deny that, but it's not the end all be all on this one. But yeah, this starting pitching range, it's very, very good. It's just for me, I guess, outside of like Chris Sale and above the next tier, like, I'd rather have the Peralta through Joe Ryan section.
Yeah, give me my third excellent bat, and I'll wait around and I'll take Peralta, Lizardo, Cease, you know, Logan Webb. Yeah.
I just don't see as big of a gap is what it comes down to.
Agreed.
Like, Lizardo's a guy we've talked about. Like, why can't he be a second round pick or better next year if he pitches 180 innings? Like, I think he is. So little things like that, I guess.
Yep.
When we break it down. Yep. Any final thoughts on the pitching roadmap here?
No, I think just, you know, we're not going to tell you all how to draft, but I would just say, if you're in these types of formats, if closer inflation is just bonkers in your home leagues, your own leagues, just have a plan. Think through. I think if in terms of like draft prep, spend the most time on closers and figure out what you want to do with that, what you're most comfortable with, how late you're willing to go to take your first closer, and kind of build your pitching plan around that. Cause I think that's the kind of the main question that you need to ask yourself and answer as you're prepping for these is what is my closer strategy?
I guess the biggest thing I'd say also for just closers and starting pitchers, cause we know there's certain pockets we like, certain pockets we don't, specific players we might like and don't, and other people might like different players. So that's awesome. But be willing to push to get them, because especially deeper in the draft, if you don't get certain guys you like, you don't want to be stuck with the alternatives. So like hitters, I feel like there's, you know, more outfielders I can choose from, where starting pitchers, like there's a much smaller group I like type thing. So Just have your players have an idea of where you got to move and shake to. I'd say that much. Adam Brunchen in the chat says, I'm surprised that the high relief price spills over into cash games or there's no overall. It's not as bad, but more than it should be, in my opinion. It's true. I think part of it's people are just on the NFBC and they see ADP and they roll with it, because, like, you know, tout labor, I know I've talked to people on, you know, Fantrax, Yahoo, they go later in those drafts. So definitely league dependent. We're talking NFBC main events where things are moved up, but that's a good point that things can change based on your format or, I guess, website you use. All right. You want to talk fab?
Ooh, it begins.
Yes.
It begins. So if you drafted, if you drafted early, if you drafted up until this point, most likely your league has a fab run this coming Sunday. I feel like that's kind of normal/standard. And so, I mean, in general, a couple things that obviously take stock of what injured guys you have and which ones you may want to IL or drop or whatever. You may want to start looking at schedules here as well. I know my guy, Kyle Freeland, is opening day starter in Miami. So you got that. But start looking at schedules. But what board we're doing, and we'll every Thursday from here on out, we will do legit fab previews with schedules and matchups and all that sort of thing. But we've done this the last couple of years, and I think it's kind of a cool way to slice and dice some potential options if you're trying to replace injured guys or you took a closer spec that obviously isn't going to work out. What we're looking at here on the board is we're looking at February ADP for 15-team fab leagues. So theoretically, leagues that you drafted last month. And there's been time for things to shake out, comparing that to main event drafts over the last week. So comparing early fab leagues versus who's going earliest in these main event leagues. And we're looking at a minimum of 400 ADP. So these are all guys that were drafted late in February or not drafted at all. And kind of comparing that with which of these players is going the earliest in drafts over the last week. And for me, this is a really kind of efficient, kind of quick way to make a ranking list of who the most expensive guys are that are going right now versus when they were drafted a month ago.
Yeah. And it's not the end all be all. Every league differs. Like, sure. Ryan mentions in this that we're talking about players taken after pick 400 in February. So you could also, like Ryan mentioned, injured players. Look at prospects. McGonigal might get the start. He's flying up draft boards now. But some leagues in February, maybe he probably got drafted, but maybe he didn't. Like if you're in a 12-team league, probably didn't. So like there's a lot of stuff to check out there. But for these 400 and beyonds, it's a lot of new job openings took place that allowed these to take place. Like Jake McCarthy, massive riser, goes to Colorado. First week's in Miami, like you mentioned, but he's going to be playing in Colorado, so that's nice.
Yep, that is one thing to start to look at with schedules. The Rockies go to Miami, as previously mentioned. Then it's not just that. They have one more road trip, and then they go back home. So you don't get any Rockies for the first full week of the season, which is kind of rough. So if you take Jake McCarthy, are you playing him the first week? And depending on your league size, like, if you're not playing Jake McCarthy, do you want to fab Jake McCarthy? It's kind of
or do you grab him for there. A buck now before he comes back to Coors?
Exactly.
So there's that game. Nassim Nunez looks like he's going to be starting shortstop for Washington. Popular stolen base target there. Don't understand the Lane Thomas love at all. He's not.
No, good. He's been like horrendous this spring too, which again doesn't mean anything, but like, why would he rise? But
when you've been horrendous, I'd like to see a pulse, and he's been bad.
Yeah.
Like bad.
Here's your guy.
Garrett Mitchell is on the rise. I still don't know where he plays because the outfield's kind of crowded there, but he's definitely cementing himself into the fourth outfielder's role. I'll say that much. They have him in a platoon in center field with Blake Perkins, which I could actually see because Blake Perkins isn't that good either. And Garrett Mitchell's actually healthy and hitting well. So there's a world if Garrett Mitchell is the strong side of the platoon, then yeah, that's actually a pretty fair situation there.
Chikini says Collins' injury is why Lane Thomas is moving up. So maybe some more playing time for Lane Thomas. But
if Lane Thomas is locked in the lineup, I want to see what pitchers are facing.
I was going with a similar retort.
So. Yeah. But yeah, Mitchell, I could actually see it. I could see it if he's the strong side of the platoon and a 15, like as a streaming outfielder, that's what we're looking for. So
yeah.
Same with Mike Yastrzemski, who I've actually targeted in reserve rounds of 15s, so don't mind that either.
Honestly, though, the hitting side of this list isn't all that sexy. Like I think like Nassim Nunez for me is probably the most exciting of the group, assuming he continues to get regular playing time. But outside of that, there's not any like game changers here. Like maybe Jake McCarthy runs into some hot streaks. We've seen him do it before, and that's interesting. But a lot of these, like Lourdes Gurriel, we were talking about Lourdes Gurriel before the show. Slow night, I guess. Like, don't know why he's getting drafted.
Because the reports are coming out that he might play in a spring game next week.
Dude, my man had ACL surgery.
It's nuts, dude. I know.
Like 9-8 months ago.
This is the Adrian Peterson rehab. Like all of a sudden he's going to be back in week one running back.
Hey, if he is, that's a great pickup in Fab. But I still think you are stashing Lourdes Gurriel. And is Lourdes Gurriel worth stashing? Probably not.
I remember when we were doing DCs together, you were talking about, I'm going to take him like around 47 for the last month and a half of the season he's playing. Well, he might get like 4 months out of him right now.
Yeah, I took him in the meatball in the 47th round because maybe he's back by September. And I don't know.
Yep, might be a little better. Pitching side, our boy Kyle Harrison leads the way. Yeah.
That pitching is side's much better. Pitching side's, we've got some juice over here. Yeah.
It's Kyle Harrison with the Milwaukee injuries could be stepping in. Mick Abel. It's Abel versus Zebby or... Does Bailey Ober go? Is it Bailey Ober? Is that what we're going with there?
So maybe, but like, don't do that, please. Bailey Ober, I think, is potentially toast. He can't hit 90. He can't even touch 90 over his three spring training starts. So that's actually a consideration for a drop. Maybe you hold for and see how he does in the regular season. If Bailey Ober even makes the rotation. I still have my concerns over Mick Abel, but he is, according to this Bloom board, the highest drafted pitcher player in main events over the last week among players who were not universally drafted back in February. Mick Abel's had a great spring. I don't know if I trust the control yet, but if you're going to kind of speculate on a breakout type, I think Mick Abel is at or near the top of the list there. It's interesting to see him next to Kyle Harrison. Who would you, if you're prioritizing Fab, and you probably will be on Sunday in the Vegas airport with me, who are you going, Kyle Harrison or Mick Abel?
Well, the lazy answer is who has the job. And we might not know on Sunday is the problem. I want to go Mick Abel, to be totally honest with you there.
Wow. Yeah. Upset. March Madness.
I like them both. I like them both a lot. I think Mick Abel might have. I think if Mick Abel joins the Twins rotation, he can stick.
That's a fair point. It's a very good point. That's a good point.
Where Kyle Harrison, if he pitches great, can stick, but it's like there's two or three injured guys ready to take his job when they come back. That's the problem.
Yep. Agreed.
And I'm trying to learn to cherish Fab the best I can in 15s. So
that's where I'm at there. And I think that's one of the bigger takeaways. We'll talk about a couple other pitchers so far, but don't go too crazy. At least as things stand on whatever night, Tuesday evening. So there's still four more days of things that can change. But in general, this crop isn't too wild for me, so I wouldn't go nuts on a week zero of Fab.
I got a couple Cardinals pitchers, Liberatore and Dustin May. May I want nothing to do with Liberatore. I've actually been targeting late just because I told myself at his price, if he can give us those first couple months where he was really good again, I can drop him just and not worry about it. Because he's showing those skills again early in spring that he showed last year, early in the season. Yep. And if you can get that for a couple months at that price, you can move on from that and see where it goes. Because he was one of the best pitchers in baseball for a stretch there last season. So if I can get something along those lines at pick 300 or so, or on the waiver wire, I'm interested in leaving. He's the opening day. Like, no one's taking his job in St. Louis, so he's got that too.
Yeah. Yeah. A rare, decent point for you there. That makes a ton of sense that, again, this is me kind of flipping that full season draft mode into Fab shorter chunks. Yeah.
If you can get these are hit it and quit it plays. Let's go.
You can get two good months out of Liberatore and drop him before he blows up again. That could work. And going to pick 307 over the last week in main events, like for a free agent in your leagues, that's at least somebody who these drafters think is worth semi important draft capital.
It's like around 2021 pick. So
yeah.
Max Scherzer is very interesting to me, and it's kind of, you could almost use the same argument with Liberatore with Scherzer. He's healthy right now. He's almost stretched, like he threw five innings the other day. We know when he's on the mound, he's Max Scherzer. And he says he's actually not dealing with the pain in his like thumb or whatever anymore, which is a big plus. So, like, I think Scherzer, he goes up even higher. I think he's close to 300 this weekend.
Yeah, and I mean, I've taken some Scherzer in drafting holds, but I was thinking, like, okay, this will be great come June, you know, when he's good to go. But obviously that timeline has accelerated, and seems like Scherzer's going to have a job, and certainly seems like he's healthy right now, to your point. So I would take Scherzer over Dustin May and Liberatore. Yes.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I'm not opposed to that. Rhett Lauder has a job for now, sort of. They mentioned their six-man goofiness rotation thing. River Ryan does not have a job at the moment, but could. I really don't like Slade Ciccone. I've always liked, but it's more of a stream play for me. And Hogan Harris is a potential closer if Sterner is not the guy. So I'm not as in love with the bottom half here. If you have any thoughts on those guys.
No, not really. Unless they have good matchups. And again, I have not looked at the schedule quite yet for these guys, or even if they're in rotation or what matchups they would get. I would assume this crew.
I'm just waiting for my schedule thingy to be updated so I can do that.
Yeah. I'll get right on that before my Vegas draft.
I know. Any chance you could do that Friday around 4? Is that possible?
I'll try, Bubba, just for you. I know.
I'm joking.
No, this bottom crew doesn't. So really, like, to kind of recap this on the hitter side, like, Nassim Nunez, Jake McCarthy, sure. I like those guys. Seem to have jobs. That's worth it. Pitcher side, Scherzer, Kyle Harrison, Mick Abel. Like, if I had to kind of prioritize a few names just to recap it for you guys, that's probably who I would prioritize in Fab. But again, I'm not going too nuts. Again, so much depends on your situation and where you have injuries and whatnot for your actual bid amounts. But I don't know. Not too thrilled with this group.
No, last thing I'll mention, though, just in case, if you struck out on like your corner infielder, Rhys Hoskins is there and he's supposed to start at first base. So, or at DH, he's supposed to get regular reps. So if you want a super late potential power guy, okay. Rhys.
You think he's not just a shortstop platooner?
Right now they got him with the full-time gig, and he's been playing pretty regularly.
Where's Curlin's back in the game? So let me...
I got to pull up his page and figure it out. But I think like Rhys could platoon with guys. There's no doubt about that, but I just don't see who they really throw out there to platoon with him is the problem.
Kurland has Rhys as a majority regular hitting fifth in the Guardians lineup. So that's a good pull. That's a good point. I like that.
All right. Let's get to the listener questions here in the Discord. We have a couple of them this evening, and we'll start with Canton Dog. For pitchers in the ADP 150 to 200 range, Are there any pitchers in this range who could outperform their projections an inch closer to the 100 ADP or better in 2027? if there is baseball. So what do you think about this pocket?
Ouch. ADP 50 to 100, he said?
No, 150 to 200. So the first pocket we discussed, to me, it's, well, Shane Baz isn't 150. Edward Cabrera, his skills are good, man. It's just health.
Yeah, I don't. I disagree.
Shane McClanahan?
No. No, I don't like anybody. Again, that's my.
I'll take Edward Cabrera there.
Especially his ceiling. I'm not going to answer the question. I don't think there's a right answer. Apologies. All right,
Corbin Young says, I haven't seen Mitch Keller's name on your charts, so we don't go that low in the draft. I'm offended, but happy to see Gore and Buich. On a serious note, biggest fade within the top 50. So we'll start there. Who's your biggest fade within the top 50?
Within the top 50?
So that first pocket of pitchers.
I'll go either DeGrom or I guess I got to say Reagans, but Reagans is looking good, man.
He's looking real good.
But he's looking good, so I don't know. I'm not drafting Reagans, but I don't know if he's a full fade. He's made it through spring training unscathed. Good for him.
Yep. For me, it's Logan Gilbert.
Okay.
I'm just out on Gilbert. Health. Didn't like what I saw last year when he came back. There's just a lot of questions I have with Logan. If he was going like 30, 40 picks later, it'd be a different discussion for me. But in this pocket, I'm out. Full out.
Fair. Okay.
Past pick 150, who's one of your targets? You have none.
Yeah, at least on this sheet here. I don't know. Let me pull up the ADP.
I'll say one guy
Shota
after 150. One guy that I have been kind of targeting, honestly, is Robbie Ray, just for the strikeout upside. If he could figure it out, I think he's pretty darn good.
Yeah,
you don't have to agree. You don't like anybody here. Don't change your tune now.
No, this group sucks, man. Like I'm honestly out down to 200, 210 plus ADP, and I don't have anyone. I've been taking the most of Jack Flaherty.
Yeah,
but I don't think he has the highest ceiling in the world. I like the value there.
Yeah, at least there's value if you wait. To your point, so that is a little bit of a different conversation than having to take these picks and hope they figured it out. Question in the chat here from Jordan: Reagans or Webb, upside or safety? Great question,
Bubba.
I know your answer.
You know my answer.
Ryan will go Logan Webb. If you want to go for the upside, it is Cole Reagans. There's no doubt about that to me. Webb is about any pitcher can get hurt, but Webb is one of the safer picks you can make, I think, in this entire draft board, especially in the top 100. Like, he is just that dude. But if we can get back to Cole Reagans giving you 150 plus, because we talked about that, like, yeah, you want to see 200 innings, but 150 with his ratios and strikeouts is still pretty, pretty good at pick 39. So I'll go ceiling of Cole Reagans, where I'll go floor of Logan Webb. And I like them both, though, to be totally honest.
I mean, I could see you doing a build with SP1, SP2 at Vegas. Though I think you'll be priced out of Reagans.
I think I will. That's why I was so happy in my OLAC where I got Chris Sale for $25. I was like, oh, dude, this is a gift from the gods. I will take this every single day because I'll never see it again.
Yeah, that's pretty nice. That's pretty nice.
That felt pretty sweet. But all right, we'll wrap it up there. Final thoughts, amigo, as this is pretty much the swan song for the 2026 draft season.
Yeah, it's all we got, folks, for draft season. We will be back at you with some type of episode or episodes in Vegas, and then back to our normal cadence next week. So no live show Thursday night. Can't wait to see you out there, man. And if anyone still listening is going to Vegas, please
hit us up.
Yeah, hit us up. Say hi. It's awesome to meet so many of you all in Vegas last year. Cannot wait for what will be 3 days of, I don't even know.
Baseball debauchery.
Three days of something.
Three and a half days.
Jesus.
I will say hit us up, though, because I remember that was Brian and I. We sat back at the airport and were like shocked about how many people there actually like took in our show and used the tools and everything. Like, it's cool to kind of talk to people in a different light and to see that we're all kind of playing. We are all playing the same game, but we all work. You know, they listen to our stuff, which was pretty cool to take in. So yes,
absolutely.
Yeah. Hit us up. We'll see you guys there that are there. If not, we'll be back with you guys live next Tuesday evening, but we will have some kind of show for you this weekend, as Ryan said. Until then, follow Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. I'm BD Entrick. This was Bubba and the Bloom episode 329. Catch y'all next time.